You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
We're the Con Guys, as in Comic-Con, and this is the Con Guys Show, coming at you straight from the heart of Hollywood, California, with the news, celebrity interviews, and fun-loving opinions to help fuel your passions. We are your ultimate insiders, filmmakers, writers, actors, costumers, gamers, panelists, but most of all, we are fans. And whether it's sci-fi, collectibles, comic books, gaming, animation, cosplay, or fan conventions, if you love it, we cover it. Your behind-the-scenes look at all things con.
Welcome back to the Con Guy Podcast here on that hashtag show YouTube channel. Today we are talking about the brand new film Skylines, when a virus threatens to turn Earth-dwelling friendly alien hybrids against humans. Captain Rose Corley, played by Lindsay Morgan, must lead a team of elite soldiers on a mission to the aliens' world in order to save what is left of humanity. Skylines, which arrives in select theaters and on demand December 18th, is the third installment of the Skyline franchise and stars Lindsay Morgan. She was from The 100 and Inside Game. Jonathan Howard from Thor, Dark World, Godzilla, King of Monsters, and many more. Rona Mitra, Alexander Siddig, and James Caso. Today, we are talking with Jonathan Howard, who plays Leon, an elite soldier, and the film's writer-director, Liam O'Donnell. Guys, thank you so much for joining us today. So glad to see you. Also,
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, today on today's podcast are my partners in crime. Who we got? Luke.
Hey, over here. I am Cheeseman. I'm a filmmaker and screenwriter, and most importantly, here with theconguy.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, old buddy Ben Cleaver. Glad to be here. And again, we're coming to you from that hashtag shows network. As always, brought to you by Neft Vodka, reminding you to please drink responsibly.
Yep. I didn't know we had a vodka sponsor.
We have coffee too, right? Coffee sponsor.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we're still doing the Death Wish coffee or not, but for a while there, they might still be doing it. Death Wish coffee, fair trade, highly caffeinated, the world's strongest coffee. If you use the, I love doing advertisements. Use the code hashtag show at deathwishcoffee.com. You can get 10% off your order. And I actually drink Death Wish coffee. I was drinking it before we got it as a sponsor. It's insane. I love the stuff. My wife and I drink it by the gallon.
There you go.
Jonathan, can you guys tell us where you are coming to us from today, since we're all in different locations?
I'm from Los Angeles, actually. For my sins, I am stuck in my house in Los Angeles. But it's great to talk to you guys because it means my wife has taken my daughter out, so I actually have some time to myself. So thank you for allowing this break from family life.
Yeah. Well, I'm in Los Angeles as well, and four kids in the house and a dog. So if you hear stuff in the background, that's just the insane asylum.
That's crazy how it goes. All three of us are in Los Angeles today. We're separated by the pandemic, so otherwise we'll be together chatting today.
So close, yet so far.
But anyways, let's go ahead and jump into the film. The name of the film, Skylines. Liam, if you could, for people who may not be as familiar with Skyline franchise, give us a little synopsis of what this particular film is about and maybe a little bit of history where it came from.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the first movie was very much you know, a bunch of people kind of waking up to discover that the apocalypse has happened and then getting mass abducted onto a spacecraft. In part two, we kind of started concurrently, a little bit lost sort of an inspired storytelling, and then went obviously beyond it. And we set up that the offspring of the couple from the first movie has her exposure to this alien light when she was in utero has given her these fantastical abilities. But also, you know, she's got a bunch of, I guess, issues in the fact that she's growing really fast and she's facing death. And so part three is jumping off of the wraparounds of part two, which is setting up that character as now a grown up in sort of this heroic sort of John Connor meets Sarah Connor type of character, trying to save the world and fight back against the aliens. And in part three, we kind of even go farther beyond that 5 years afterwards to set up this whole new adventure. which you guys described in the mouthful of a log line. But it's really, you know, kind of a mash of doing a sort of post-apocalyptic story where we're dealing with the fallout of an alien invasion much farther down the line than you normally get to see. And then mixing that into a kind of a cool new take on with a space adventure and introducing new aliens and characters and kind of letting me play with all the toys in the toy chest.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Sounds like blast.
And I got a question, and then I'm going to pitch it over to Ben and Luke. But, like, Jonathan, and just to give folks a little bit of an introduction, it seems like you kind of have been making a name for yourself as an action hero, basically. Your recent work includes the films World War Z with Brad Pitt, Thor the Dark World with Chris Hemsworth, and Godzilla King of Monsters, in addition to just a couple TV series that I'll mention, The Last Ship and Kingdom. Wow, what is it about these action roles that attracts you and your most recent role here as well?
Unemployment, probably. So the only guys that give me a job. No, you know, I don't know. Like, I'd say in what I do in Skylines is definitely more physical. This is a completely different kind of guy that, you know, what did it for is Ian the intern, who's kind of this comical, like, relief, geeky, you know, scientist. Whereas with Leon, you know, he's definitely got a bit more depth to him. He's definitely got this backstory. And, you know, what attracted me to Leon was, you know, that this guy, he's not aware of this at the start of the movie, but he's lost and he's sad and he doesn't know this. He doesn't know how to express this. And he thinks he's found his tribe with the likes of Alexander Siddig and Daniel Bernhardt. He's like, I'm going to follow these guys. And what I loved about Leon and what Liam wrote with this film is Leon's arc, you know, from where he is at the beginning of the movie to where he is at the end of the movie. I thought it's something that I don't see a lot in sci-fi movies, where it is character-driven. And, you know, and I like to think I brought some. Oh, yeah, there he is. There's me looking for the toilet. but, you know, I'd say, like, I do have a martial arts background, and I did go to drama school in the UK called Lambda, and stage combat was a big part of it. And this is, even though you mentioned Kingdom, which is a show about, you know, MMA fighters, I actually just play Nick Jonas's gay assistant boyfriend. But I'm like, finally, I get to show some skills. And he's like, no, you're just the assistant in this. So when Liam offered me this, you know, it was a really good opportunity for me to show that I can be physical and that I can attempt to be the leading man for a change. So yeah, that's kind of why I jumped in on this one.
Cool.
The classic actor answer. I like having work.
Yeah. I mean, that's the honest answer. I mean, I can tell you that it's like, you know, character and storyline, but, you know. And also, actually, I have to add, at the time, my wife, Elodie Young, who's an actor, she was doing a movie in Toronto, and I told her that I wasn't going to work and that I was going to take care of our daughter and be a supportive partner. And then the script, and I was like, I could also go to Lithuania for 3 months and have like 8 hours of pure sleep. I'm going to go and do this space movie. I'll be back in 3 months.
Yeah.
It's a thinker. Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
Save humanity, take care of my baby, you know.
Right.
Noble thing, right? You know, I went to save
it's true.
Hey, you have to provide. That's part of being a parent. You got to.
Solid point. Luke, I think I stepped on you in that last question.
Oh, no, I was just saying you were almost a Jonas brother.
Joe bros.
But I gotta go for Ben.
Ben? Yeah, no, this movie looks amazing. The you know, and this was done primarily on an independent level, wasn't it, Liam? And it's very special effects heavy, and I've done independent projects that are very special effects heavy, but there's a lot of development, a lot of time that goes into it. Was this the success or the recognition of the first two Skyline films that kind of rolled into this one to make it so epic and et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a benefit to doing a sequel is that you're building off a foundation, right? The first movie was a lot of R&D, and that was at Hydraulics, and the second one was at Hydraulics as well, visual effects company. This third one, the only way to get it made was to make it a UK co-production, so we had to find a UK visual effects partner, which we did in Lipsync, and so that was kind of a different experience for me because I had to kind of like take everyone to like Skyline School, which is really like nerdy, you know, it's stuff that's not really even in the movie, but you have to use the language when you're doing all the visual effects of like what each creature is and what they can do and how the tentacles look and how the light, the volumetric light of the siren lights work and behave. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was definitely like more, it required more flexibility and more communication on my end, especially because we had such a short post time. You know, we locked the edit in February of this year. Visual effects didn't really start until March. And I'm going to be honest with you, even that March into July was like, or maybe into June was like a lot of just working on the space look and developing, the opening and the ending and the planet, the cobalt destruction stuff without giving too much away. And so it really all poured in like July, August, September, and even obviously October to the very, very last day. Wow. They did an amazing job on such a, you know, like small, like you said, small resources, short schedule. There's a lot of really great filmmaking tools. If you guys are saying you're filmmakers, like Frame.io is an amazing cloud-based piece of, I guess it would be software, where we could put every single visual effects shot up and you can make notes per frame and it lets you just draw on everything. And everyone that I wanted to have access to it, I could tag them for different notes. And it helped when you're, you know, we're using Lipsync as the main vendor, but we also had a bunch of smaller vendors, you know, from the US and from India and from Germany. So it helped everybody get on the same page and they could all see that, you know, the same movie that we're making any 24 hours a day, because obviously everyone's working on different schedules. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, being a convention type show, we love creatures. We love, you know, like the big monsters and all that. Can you tell us a little bit about that design, how you came up with it, and just the what you're trying to create with all these monsters?
Yeah, I mean, the main one that we inherited from the first movie is the tanker, which I think my favorite scene is when Leon and Lindsay, you know, kind of fight together and end up getting inside one of these monsters, which is like, feels like it's sort of the culmination of the three movies to me in a funny way. And I just love how kind of how fun the tone gets in the back half of this film. But that tanker, that's one we inherited. The pilots, which the character of Trent and Violet and some of the other characters in the Harvesters were ones I developed in part two to be, you know, physical foam latex suits, you know, basically throwing it back to the original Predator and Alien films, like the exact same technology updated. And so then for part three, I wanted to obviously have some new creatures. One, we have sort of a Russian doll motif where there's always like a creature inside a creature. And yeah. So for the, our matriarch character, I wanted to kind of like peel back the Harvester's face and see what was underneath it. And so, that was developing a CG look, through Scope out of Cologne and Lipsync and kind of bringing that to life. And I'm really happy we had Fong. Zhang, who's a great stunt performer who works with Real Deal Effects, and he kind of performed that character, which ended up being the real basis for what that creature did. And then, of course, we have our new creatures in this that Jonathan has a cool fight scenes with are the Shadows. And so the motivation for them to me was like, I have these big guys in these practical suits as aliens, and we're going to have those on Earth during those action scenes. And those are very kind of big and clunky. And so I wanted the creatures on the alien planet to be a lot faster and move more nimbly and kind of feel a little bit more dangerous. Like they could just come up behind you and pull you into the darkness. And so those were all done with practical stuntmen on set in tracking marker leotards. Like, it's not mocap. It's very much just having someone in a leotard with tracking markers and basing the final animation off of their in-camera performance. It's just like, it's like an old technology that, you know, still 100% works and allows you to kind of bake in really great performance if you have great stuntmen, which we did. And it helped, I would think, Jonathan, you know, speaking of a guy who, like, you know, the big difference, I'd say, I think he backed me up, between like a Godzilla and in those movies is the prep time. You know, they have so much money to get the actors in to prepare on these action scenes. And for us, it's like, hey, dude, you're filming in 2 weeks. Like, here's some creatine and like a sword. And like, luckily he had this amazing background, because, you know, his fight scene where he runs up and tries to rescue Rose in the cavern, I think he'd rehearsed it like a few times, and it's like, okay, it's go time. Techno crane's going. You've got to hit all these beats. And by the way, you're 10 feet off the ground and you could fall off. So he went up and he kind of nailed that. And that was when I was like, okay, we're like super lucking out on this guy. And then I kind of pushed it further on his next big action scene. I was like, you know, we haven't really done a one-er yet. Do you think you could do, you know, a one-er when you fight these aliens, you know, with a sword? And so he embraced that. And I think he like worked at the stunt guy's apartment like really late, two nights in a row. And then bang, we're on set. We're doing it.
Cool.
Jeez Louise. Jonathan, expand on that a little bit. Like, from the, you know, from the actor's perspective, I've done stunts and stuff too. Indie, you don't have a whole lot of time. How satisfied were you with the final product?
Yeah, you know, we touched upon difference on, you know, these big budget movies like your Marvel films and your Godzilla films. And as fun as they are to be on, you know, the advantage of doing a film like Skylines is that it's an indie sci-fi movie. So, yeah, the budget is 1/10 of what, you know, Thor was. But what is the payoff for that? Well, the payoff is that you don't have a hierarchy of 20 exec producers that are going to, like, you know, are going to be arguing over a syllable or, you know, a word in a sentence. This was me and Liam, Matthew, Charles, the producer, and we'd have these little conversations during a scene of like, what about if we just try and reveal this about Liam? What about if we just change this? And he's like, Liam, you know, why I love working with Liam, and that's why I have such a great experience on this, is there became a level of trust pretty early on in this process, where he trusted me and I could try and go, you know, make some bolder choices than maybe I have done in these other, you know, bigger budget movies. Mm-hmm. And it just meant that there was a freedom. And yeah, sometimes those choices fell flat on his face and was like, what did you just try then? But, you know, but then sometimes it would work and we would keep it. And then, yeah, absolutely. The only negative about it is the action side of it. You know, luckily I have like some experience in martial arts, but by no means am I Jackie Chan. Yeah, it was real. It was rock and roll, sci-fi, indie filmmaking at times. But I love that. And it's like, okay, what are you going to do? It's fight or flight. I'm either going to jump into this with my instincts and just say, pedal to the metal, let's have a go. And that's what we did. And, you know, I'm actually very proud of the fight scenes, especially because, you know, more than half of those fight scenes we choreographed on the day, in the morning, as Liam said, like the night before in the stunt guy's apartment, like using a toilet roll as a you know, as one of these hybrid swords. What are we doing here? Like, I have no idea. But, you know, that trust with Liam that, all right, I just focus on my stuff and I'm going to let Liam worry about everything else.
Right. That's filmmaking, as far as I'm concerned.
I have a question. So, this film, if you break it down, is basically, or it's an alien pandemic. It's about, you know, an alien pandemic. I guess you could describe it that way. Would you describe it that way? And if so, do you think it's kind of like it resonates a little bit more because of when it's being released?
I don't know. I think it could be a double-edged sword. I try to, like, you know, I want people to know it's a good time first and foremost, and not like a depressing reminder of our current situation. So I'm always like, yeah, it's funny that those things turned out, but at the same time, like, you know, I really wish that we could just go on a space mission right now and get our lives back to normal and get everybody back to safety. But yeah, it is weird. Like, I even remember, you know, like, doing the scene with Lindsay and Alexander at the beginning where they're talking about the pandemic and kind of setting up the stakes of the movie. And even some, I think someone was like, what exactly is a pandemic? Like, it wasn't really like, you know, in our vernacular the way it is now. But yeah, it's both a good and a bad thing. We're relevant, but I wish we weren't.
Hey, can I just rephrase that though? It's not really a pandemic film. It's, you know, that's a little bit of the basis. It's more a film like Alien, Starship Troopers, these big action films, which we all grew up on, which we love. Now, can you talk? It's more like that. And are these films that were they inspirations for you when you were making this film?
Oh, obviously, yeah. I mean, I can't help but wear my inspirations on my sleeve. But I do feel like it's like there's like a certain type of movie that was made in the 80s and 90s that like they stopped kind of making, at least at this budget level, which even to say we're like a tenth of those big budget movies, but like they just stopped making them, which it is that, you know, that James Cameron, Paul Verhoeven, John McTiernan, John Carpenter kind of vibe that obviously is like, it's my favorite type of movie. It's the type of movie I still, every Friday night, if there was a new movie like that every Friday night, that's the one I would click on every single time. And I just feel like, I think like a lot of people in our generation, it's just like, but they want to go back to that. They want new versions of those stories. And, you know, hopefully that's kind of what we're doing. Cause you know, that's still the stuff that most inspires me. I do love a lot of new movies. I'm definitely not one of those people that like, I hate this. Like I really love the Marvel movies. I like Thor Dark World. I like, Mandalorian. I really do enjoy it, but there is something to be said about that kind of like physical based action sci-fi with some hard edges to it, R-rated stuff that like, it just seems to have gone away. And so, you know, hopefully we're keeping that spirit alive.
Absolutely.
Forgive the interruption.
Hi, I'm Mike.
Hi, I'm Kylan.
Hi, I'm Eric. And we are
Mighty Marvel Geeks.
Mighty Marvel Geeks is your award-winning show about all things Marvel, with news, rumors, commentary, and interviews covering movies, comics, and all points in between.
We'll also have our recommendations on what to pick up each week on New Comic Book Day, as well as a weekly pick from New Marvel Unlimited.
Find us online at MightyMarvelGeeks.net.
Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your favorite podcast.
That's Mighty Marvel Geeks. And remember,
we
are
Groot.
Yeah, that's the biggest issue in Hollywood today is that original sci-fi IP is very hard to shop around to a major budget, you know, studio or contributor, because they just see it as a big risk, a big expensive risk. And so that's, I think, independent is where a lot of that.
But even us, I mean, there's a reason why it's part three, right? Like, it's like,
right.
If we wanted to get this movie done as an original story and we took the name Skylines out, it would have been impossible,
right?
Impossible to get this movie at this budget level. You know, it just wouldn't happen. So to me, I kind of take it on as a responsibility to science fiction community and that I'm a fan of and a lover of, that like each one has to feel like its own thing. And I put that pressure that it's like not just going to be another group of people in an apartment looking at, you know, the alien invasion, which was like part of the pressure that I got for Beyond Skyline. It was like, just do the same formula, you know, but make it better and put it in like China. And I was like, no. So like each one has to kind of be its own adventure and work as its own standalone story. And we kind of get to make, you know, like a different genre each time and kind of backdoor originality through a franchise, if that makes sense.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. No. And I think that's the thing. What I'm saying is that's the fallacy, is they see it as too big of a risk when really people want this and people want new ideas and new adventures. And so, you know, maybe independent is where that's going to be happening a lot more, you know, kind of taking your lead on that. So, but yeah. Commendations.
But Lee, like I say, you guys, this did not feel like an independent film. This felt like a major studio film. It's huge. It's big. It's so much action. And you guys were able to, you talk about a tenth of the budget. That budget really stretched, and we can see it.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, it was, it's like each movie is a reaction to the incredible, immense learning experience of the one before it. Right. So like each time you do one of these things, it's like going to college in a way. You're like, you learn so many things and you're like, oh my God, I could do that better. I could do that more efficient the next time. And that kind of goes into how you even approach the script, to then planning how to film it. You know, like the second movie, I wanted to build one big tunnel set that was going to be my subway tunnel. It was going to be my ship tunnel, and it was going to be the bunker tunnel for the third act. And that was my genius idea that like no one would listen to, and they didn't want to try it. I couldn't convince them. And then the movie budget wise ended up costing, I think, more than if they had just built like one amazing set and done what I said. The third one, that people did listen, and we just built this amazing cobalt set, and we kept kind of using a lot of smart practical ways to reshuffle the deck almost every single day. So every day that Johnny and the team would come in, it would be kind of all rearranged to a totally new version of the planet, even to the point where we built the human spaceship, you know, the converted mothership. And then once we were done filming that, we redress that with alien, webbing and, you know, all our kind of like liquid latex tricks to use that again to make another set out of it. So it's just constantly reusing things and being more efficient.
Yeah.
Now, a big part of sci-fi is the weapons. You know, you got Star Wars with the blasters and the lightsabers and all that. Now, that was such a big component you had to bring to the film. Can you tell us a little bit about the weapons and, Jonathan, what it was like working with the weapons of the film?
I mean, like, day one when I got loaded up and I was like, this is my sci-fi little nerd dream. Like, I had the most weapons out of every character in the movie. I think when I got off the ship and stepped on Cobalt, you know, I had two of these hybrid pistols. I had a hybrid AK-47 rifle. I haven't seen that picture there. I had these two swords that are like hybrid kind of Star Wars Jedi swords and a flamethrower. I was like, this is amazing. And then after like 3 days of shooting in it, the game was like, how can I get rid of these heavy weapons? So I carrying them in every scene. But no, like absolutely, that was a dream for me. You know, I think Daniel Bernard, I think he was a little bit jealous and his insecurity, inferiority complex that my weapon was bigger than his. You know, but, that was really fun. And, you know, it's just a credit to Liam. Like we were talking about the budget before, like it's just a credit to Liam that you don't notice the difference in this quality, right? In this production, like this budget, like that's a massive credit to Liam and how he managed to make this film. I remember shooting Thor, and there was a scene, and there was we were running away, and like an explosion, and like a kiss Kat Dennings, and then one of the producers in post was just like, yeah, you know, we wanted to put it wasn't exciting enough, so we put a monster in there. $5 million to put a monster in for like 5 seconds, you know, and then the advantage of doing making this indie sci-fi movie is that you don't have green screen as much. Liam really wanted to work against doing green screen and use stuntmen as much as they can. And and the payoff of that is, you know, a few people that have watched the movie and the interviews I've done, they commented on like the chemistry and the relationship between me and Trent, Rose's pilot brother, who's got the alien body but the consciousness of a human. Now that was something I didn't even think about, and that only came out because Jeremy Fitzgerald, the stunt guy playing Trent, the pilot, it's because we were living in the same hotel for 3 months, and so when we're on set, I actually had someone to like to play off. I didn't have like a really bored, nonplussed first AD. Okay, and now the monster picks up the human being. Oh, he's eating the human being. That's scary, you know, like we didn't have those problems because we actually had, you know, stuntmen in stilts, 9 foot high with this amazing, amazing costume to play off.
And Jeremy is kind of Trent. Like he is like a bro who's like grumpy, and like just like wants to be drinking beer and like, yeah, you know, fuck off. So like that we ended up like, you know, having, it's all kind of there in the performance. He's kind of like the surly, you know, tank who's going along on the adventure. But yeah, the green screen was going back to that Beyond Skyline and the lessons was like, because we didn't do this one big set build, I ended up having to shoot like this massive set piece in on the alien ship green screen. And it was in a green tube with a techno crane without any previs. And so that like made me grow like these extra neurons in my head of how hard it was. And especially like doing an emotional scene where Frank Grillo's son gets his brain ripped out right in front of them. And it's just in a green tube. It was really, really difficult. So I never wanted to do it again. We only had two fully green screen sets in this. And it was mainly when Lindsay's on the catwalk with the core drive. And there was a deleted scene where Leon took Lindsay to go look at the core drive on the mothership, which we ended up not needing. But even those 2 days when we just did those green screen days, like everyone was so much less focused. I remember like everyone was just bullshitting on that deleted scene and like adding in jokes the whole time because your brain is like searching for the reality of it. Yeah. It was kind of a philosophy on this movie that we would, as much as possible, at least have like three walls of set so that the green screen would be on the other side. So we could film most of the action, most of the drama, and have everything be in camera and not worry about it being a visual effects shot. But then like when Daniel and Leon's fight, you know, it's going to look more epic if we put the dolly on the other side and we have the CG ship, you know, behind them kind of framing that battle as they go back and forth. So that was kind of all the lessons from part two being used in three.
So Liam, let me ask you a question about the trilogy in general. Maybe some people aren't as familiar with, you know, the legacy of this film.
Most people, yeah.
Yeah. Well, can we talk about like where it came from? For example, Luke and you were talking before we started taping about like the first time he heard about it was his very first. Where was it, Luke?
Well, I was just saying I saw that this was on Comic-Con. I unfortunately hadn't been to Comic-Con by 2010. I didn't go till 2012 or 13, but I saw you guys had a panel on Comic-Con. I just wanted to hear about us being kind of a Comic-Con kind of based type show or kind of into all that culture. Just want to know like what your experience with Comic-Con was like and having like a gigantic Hall H panel there.
Yeah.
Even I go back to the year before, it was 2009. Greg and Colin, who directed the first one, like they signed with CAA that year and they were like, we have a Comic-Con party. You guys should just go down there and absorb it. And it was great. It was great advice. We went down and we just went to some of the panels and like walked around. I found a Dune t-shirt that I wore out. And I just had like this weekend of just kind of absorbing it. And then flash forward the next year, having a panel there was like, wow. You know, it kind of that happened quick. So the panel to me was like, I mean, we filmed this movie for that first movie for like, you know, 40 days for under $1 million to shoot at Greg's apartment building. And then like 4 months later, we're at Comic-Con. It was like being on a rocket ship, really. And we had a great marketing guy from Relativity who passed away. His name was Jeff Amer. And he came up with all these really great gags where they had like these foam people. They had this machine that made foam people and then lifted them up into the air. And that was in front of our massive billboard that said Skyline. So yeah, that was kind of the whole peak of the first movie experience. I would have loved to have gone to a Comic-Con for the second movie, but I think we had more money in like our Twitter budget of marketing for the first movie than we had for all of the second movie.
Let me just real quick follow up with that. And then I know Ben and Luke have a couple more questions as well, but like, let's talk about that first movie for a second. And in your director's statement, this is what you say. They made another Skyline movie? It's a legitimate, crazy question. I know it's even hard for me to believe we've made it this far in the 10 years since Skyline was released. Though the independent invasion thriller was an unlikely success story at the global box office, some of the critical reactions were so negative at the time, I was not sure that I would have a career a decade later, let alone a third entry in the franchise. You wrote that first film, and it got decent global box office, but what was the reception audiences or critically, I guess I should say? And
I think it's funny I said Twitter because that was like early days of Twitter, but it was
I could just, I knew it was all bad from like, you know, we even had like the premiere on like a Tuesday, and then there were, and it was great. Everyone had such an amazing time at that premiere. And then I think it was like Wednesday night, Thursday was the first review, and it was like scathing at a level that I was just not expecting, because we had tested it and you show it to investors and you kind of know when investors are happy, they don't ask you about a sequel. Right. And they don't, they just kind of go, it's great. And they leave the room, you know? So it did kind of take us by surprise how much people did not respond. And when I was on Twitter and like refreshing it, there were people just like, worst movie ever. And you're going to get that on every movie, but it was just like, the percentages were not looking good.
Can I just ask you real quick, what changed between movie one and movie two? Because you were the writer, but not the director.
Yeah.
Right. But then you directed the follow-up 7 years later.
Well, I think it's a little alchemy all in all. Like, I think if the first movie was just released as a festival, like midnight movie, I think the reaction would be better without changing a single thing about it. But when you kind of put this massive marketing campaign behind it, and like they even recorded lines from the actors that weren't in the movie being like, we have to fight back. That was literally never, ever a part of the movie. It wasn't an action movie. It was like a zombie movie, you know, where the characters are sitting there listening to the radio, like in Night of the Living Dead, and they realize like they're fucked. That was the whole vibe. But because we had such amazing kind of sci-fi war imagery with like this, the airplanes and the nukes and all that, it just was like this, a genre mash that people weren't, it wasn't delivering on what the expectations were, which was that, you know, the heroes were going to figure out some sort of weakness and kick alien ass. So, mm-hmm. Part of that was the reaction for part two to be like, okay, I think this alien menace that we've in the way that these visuals work lends itself more to an action movie than an existential horror movie. So let's, like, if we're going to do it, let's go, you know, kitchen sink, full on action movie. And so I really just sort of embraced like, what if you were, you know, on a subway with like John McClane, and we did like Die Hard, you know, in an alien invasion. And so that was really the kicking off for Beyond Skyline. And then lightning kind of struck from the movie gods when we were over scouting in Indonesia, and it became presented to me that Iko and Yayan might be available. And, you know, I jumped on that and did everything I could to get them in the movie. And then they were like, well, do you want us to do choreo? I was like, absolutely. So then it just kept evolving into this crazy genre mash where we, you know, had a bunch of martial arts and the action just kept getting bigger and better.
Cool.
So I have a question for Jonathan. Jonathan, you're coming into the third movie of a trilogy. Okay. And Lindsay has been in the second one and the third one, correct? That's correct. Right. Yeah. Now, I had the opportunity, I probably like 7 years ago or something, I worked with Lindsay in a kids in schools program called The Big Show, where they mentor kids and the kids write little scripts, and then they bring in actors and improvisers to perform them in front of the school at an assembly. And I met her, and I'm sure she wouldn't remember me, but I believe she
doesn't remember me. Don't worry.
she's a pretty big sci-fi fan, I think, going back pretty far. I think she's like a Star Wars fan, if I'm not mistaken. Jonathan, coming into this, were you a sci-fi fan? Did you know about the rest of the franchise, or was this something that you were like, oh, I better watch these movies before I come in?
I mean, a little bit of both. Like I'd heard of Beyond Skylines. I'd seen it advertised on Netflix. Am I a sci-fi fan? Yeah. I love escapism and I love fantasy. And, you know, that's kind of my go-to film of choice, you know, is to just to imagine what life could be like, or, you know, in another world. So yeah, I was a fan, and I was aware of Lindsay's work, and, you know, and then when I read the script, and then I went back and watched the movies, and just to see how it had evolved from movie one and to where we were going to go to with this one. And then, you know, found out who the rest of the cast was and getting to have scenes with James Cosmo and Alexander Siddig. I was like, yes, please. I think I want to be a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a blast.
Now, for either of you, was there ever any like funny moments? I'm sure there's plenty of funny moments, but any particular moments that stuck out as just funny, cool things that happened?
Yeah, there's actually a fun deleted scene, which I think will be on the Blu-ray, which is still pretty rangy on the Blu-ray, but because it was just like, you just knew it wasn't going to be in the movie. But I let Jonathan just go nuts, which was like the kind of Waiting for Godot on an alien planet. Once Trent and Lindsay, once Trent and Rose get separated from Owens and Daniel, Owens and Leon, they're kind of taken out of the narrative, and they kind of like watch them jump over the edge. And we just had Leo, like, you know, Johnny and Daniel just like improvised this whole scene where he was like, "Oh, he caught you off guard, did he? So what's the plan now, boss?" And he's like, "We'll figure it out." And you're like, "Okay, in that case, I'm going to go have a piss." And he goes and just takes a piss behind the pillar on an alien ship. And like, even my first AD went up to me, Elliot, who was like, "Are you sure you want him to just like take a piss in this movie? Are you for sure this is a good idea?" I was like, "It's probably not going to make it into the movie." But of course, in the movie, we just kind of cut back to them and we just have Johnny like taking a piss without anyone commenting on it. And I just kind of like it because it's a weird little like off thing that you wouldn't do in a normal movie, but like, yeah, I mean, they've got nothing else to do. I would probably go take a pee right there. That's
awesome. In these end of the world epic sci-fi movies, when do you ever see someone just go into the bathroom, you know, like eating a bit of food, you know? You don't see them doing these things. And it was like a bunch of you know, little 2/8 of a page, and we were going to try and just film them, you know, because it's an indie movie, we don't have a lot of time. We were just going to try and run them all together. And and he was like, rather than just stopping and then starting again, I was like, well, what would actually happen in this in between time? And then we had the, you know, and he was like, well, just keep playing it. And so like, Daniel would be stood there. I'd be like, I'm going for a piss. And Daniel would be waiting for me. I'm like, how's it going, boss? He's like, they showed up. They're like, no. All right, I won't be long. It's like,
yeah. I think that, was it the first season of Mandalorian last year was the very first time they ever mentioned using the bathroom in the Star Wars universe?
Oh, no, that was this season. Oh, he said, if you need to use the privy, I think he called it. If you need to use the privy. And I was like, that's the first time they've ever mentioned the bathroom in Star Wars.
All right. We are coming close to the end of our time together, guys. Hey, Luke or Ben, do you guys have anything left to ask these guys about the film?
Where can people see it?
You can see it on VOD, so that means like iTunes, Amazon, your on-demand, if you have DirecTV, all those pay-per-view type portals, December 18th. Mm-hmm. And it will be in some select theaters and drive-ins, but I have no idea what that means because the lockdown quarantine stuff keeps getting worse every day. So I would recommend watching it at home or at a drive-in.
Cool.
If possible.
And Liam, and my final question is, you were the writer on the first film. Were you hired in, or was this your baby? Because it seems like you seem to be the carrier of the flame of the franchise right now. How did that happen from you being the writer to now it is kind of your thing?
I came up with the germ, I'd say, of the idea. Okay. I remember, you know, texting Greg what the idea was, and he was like, "Let's go get lunch." And then we kind of hatched a plan. It was like a Monday morning, which is why the movie company name for one was Black Monday. And then, I went to Joshua Cortez. He was a previz artist at Hydraulix that I had worked on with on AVP2 in their trailer. And so I was like, he had a real strong horror background. And so I was like, let's both work on this movie together. I'm going to work on like a 3-page treatment. You work on a 3-page treatment, and then let's see where they line up. And we had a bunch of similarities, and we kind of meshed them together and would pass the script back and forth. But we worked on the treatment for part two together. But then when it came time to writing it, and when I knew I was going to direct it, I was like, I just kind of want to, I'm going to just write this for myself because, you know, I can't be precious with anything. And as Johnny will tell you, I'm not very precious with my own words. I'm constantly, you know, looking for inspiration and trying to always make it better in any way possible, which is why it was always great to have him on set because I'm not the best at comedy, and having someone with that comedic background, he could kind of always pick his spots and add levity where we needed it.
Yeah. And I got two things I want to thank you for. One, Thank you for bringing Rona back too. I love her. She is amazing.
Look at that woman.
We love Rona. Yeah. Well, we all should have a moment of silence for Rona.
on the big screen is amazing. And number two, thank you for having like practical aliens that you get to punch and it feels real. Like I am.
Welcome to Earth.
Jonathan actually has like a therapy session with Trent at the end, and of course the only breakthrough is just giving him a stiff elbow to the head.
I love that. Good. Hey guys, thank you so much for coming.
I do have one final question. Yeah. So is there any talks of a fourth film, and if so, do you have any type of dream casting, like if you could pull any kind of like actor or actors into this universe, like what would be that dream casting?
There's talk of a fourth film, but it's without getting too committal. I'm working on what that would be. It's interesting. I do love that we brought in the British flavor on this one. The one actress I've been thinking about is Gwendolyn Christie from Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
I feel like she could walk onto a Skyline set and fit right away. But that's kind of the initial germ of my ideas for part four.
Oh, let's make it happen. Let's make
it
happen.
Heard it here.
Guys, thank you so much for joining us today for the Kind Guy podcast. Liam, where can people maybe find out more information or follow you about your upcoming projects?
Liam Odin on Twitter and in Instagram update. I've been doing a ton of behind the scenes photos on the Instagram, almost every day, because we just have so many. And it was such a good movie to shoot and such a great group of people. I love kind of sharing those.
That's cool. All right, Jonathan, where can people find out about what you're working on?
Yeah, I suppose on the old Instagram, something that I've been resisting for so many years. I remember on Thor, Natalie Portman being like, yeah, I don't do that. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do it either. And, 7 years later, I'm like, damn, I missed that boat, didn't I?
Yeah, I think she's got like 10 million followers, so maybe she was lying.
Yeah, she's finally come around to it.
You sabotaged your career. Let's get it out there.
No, thanks for having us. You guys have been awesome. And good luck to you guys on all your writing and acting and producing endeavors as well.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
All right. She's been...
And yeah, you can follow me here at Cheese on Couch on both Twitter and on Instagram. And also check us out on theconguy.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I can.
All right. Oh, Jonathan's taking a picture of the screen. I love it. That's going on Instagram, everybody. Mr. Jonathan Howard on Instagram.
No. For the gram.
The gram. All right, everybody. My name is Ben Cleaver. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at BenKlieWer. Cleaver, it's easy to say, hard to spell. Remember, everybody, I'm always drinking out of this red cup because whenever Ben Cleaver shows up, it's always a party.
All right.
Try to keep up.
Go out and see the film. It comes out December 18th. See it safely. See it video on demand or in select theaters, wherever it is showing. Liam, Jonathan, thank you for joining us today. Guys, please follow us here on The Con Guy. Leave comments. Give us good comments. So that we can keep on going. All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.